Friends, I am delighted to welcome a friend to the program, and Martin O'Muilor, this indeed, first of all, you're very welcome, but this is a special commemorative weekend, you know, considering that we're talking about the Good Friday Agreement, and I'm kind of shocked that that's 24 years ago, but it is. And it is indeed my pleasure to welcome you.
Thank you, Adrian, and hats off to you and Anya for keeping hope alive during this lockdown and keeping people connected to the radio show. We appreciate that very much. And thanks for remembering these important anniversaries. And to be candid, I grew up in a city which was at war, which was a difficult city, a divided city, a city where there was a lot of hate, to be quite honest, and where really there were too many funerals on all sides, and where it seemed to me, certainly as someone who was involved in politics at that time, it seemed to me that it was in a cul-de-sac of violence and tit-for-tat and endless conflict or struggle. And it's only in fact that with the Good Friday Agreement that we understood that politics could work, that a deal could be made, that compromise was not a dirty word. And that lesson, I think, has stood with us well. But to be quite frank, I had just left Belfast City Council in 1997. The Good Friday Agreement was the Easter of 1998. It surprised me that the warring parties could sit down and make an agreement which turned out, of course, to be a lasting agreement. And above all else, and we've great peacemakers here from all sides, but above all else, kudos to George Mitchell and to the American government and to Bill Clinton, because without that magic, without that really added addition of the push and the pull from America, we would still be at war.
Martin, I want to ask you, though, about the atmosphere at the time, and I was among many journalists who was there for that weekend. And, you know, I wish I could say in hindsight that this was going to be the weekend, but it was we made a number of trips around that particular time. And I came back from Belfast wondering, to myself at least, wondering whether or not this would actually play out, how, you know, what the stumbling blocks would be along the way. And now 24 years later, Martin, what is it, if you had to evaluate that not only the significance of the agreement, but the terms of the agreement, and overall, what is your opinion with respect to how the implementation has gone so far?
Well, I think the first thing is when you look at its impact, the impact of the Good Friday Agreement has been transformative, has been groundbreaking. Thousands of people are alive today who wouldn't be alive but for the Good Friday Agreement. I don't think you can give any greater praise or plaudits to any peace deal than to say that there are people walking around this great city of Belfast today who would be in the ground but for the courage and the vision of those who realised there had to be a deal. But back in that time, Adrian, people were very tentative. They were wary. They weren't sure that, and speaking from the Republican community, and speaking candidly, there was a euphoria around the ceasefires of 1994. And I know there were reversals, but it seemed then there would be an end to the armed campaign. And that did seem like a, I don't want to use the word victory, but it seemed to be an honest conclusion to the campaign with dignity. That euphoria didn't carry through, to be quite honest, the Good Friday Agreement. Of course, it's many pages, it's detailed, it was lawyerly language. So there wasn't that same punching the air, if you were saying, this is absolutely fantastic. But of course, that's politics. Politics is very rarely those great moments of huge breakthrough where you say, this is a great step forward, especially if you really want to have steps forward for only one side. And I think what the Good Friday Agreement taught us over a period is that the common ground and expanding the common ground, that was the new game, and that was the only game in town. That was the new arena of endeavour, that actually every time you made peace, one heart at a time, as someone once said, that made your ultimate objectives of a peaceful city, a united communities, and of course then our dream of our nation of a united Ireland, all that became closer. So in hindsight, and I didn't see this at the time, the decision to end the armed campaigns, to broker a man of steel between the British, the Republicans and the Loyalists, to try and find another way forward to make politics work, that was the greatest gift that my generation ever received. So I've brought up in Andersontown in West Belfast in the 70s with gun battles on the streets, many dear friends of our family shot dead, many of them ordinary civilians, into the 80s and that terrible low-level dirty war, and thinking it could never end. And yet now we're in a society where our children are worried about football, they're worried about education, a few bob to go to the disco at night, rather than us having to make journeys to prisons as our previous parents and grandparents did. So Good Friday Agreement has not been implemented in full. It is like all agreements, there are some flaws. And that little item which gave me great heart when I read the Good Friday Agreement sitting above a lock in Donegal in 1998, because I wasn't sure there was enough in it really for all the suffering that people had gone through, especially the Republican community. But there were references to the Irish language for the first time ever. So a young person who, like myself, had learned Irish, and I thought, well, look, this is really saying it's about respect. And of course, the element of the Good Friday Agreement, which has been implemented the least by the British government since then, have been those elements about the Irish language. And of course, that would cause you some worry, because that is about respect and dignity and equality. But despite that, in my view, it has stood the test of time. It needs defended. And of course, who is in our corner today, as they were in 1998, standing up for all sides and defend the Good Friday Agreement? It's Irish America. And thank God for that, because it's always under attack. There are always attempts to undermine the Good Friday Agreement. And well, there's not everything that I want that there, it is compromised. If the American government and the Irish American community can defend what was won in 1998, then I think we have great hope for the future.
If we go back to that time, of course, Bertie Ahern was Taoiseach, and he joined other politicians, and you know, obviously, at a time like this, we truly miss the efforts and the dignity of Martin McGuinness, obviously with Gerry Adams, but it was again a period where we saw the island of Ireland, giving their all to making this happen. And it wasn't, maybe for the first time, the fracture of political parties and indeed the politics of Northern Ireland and the what looked like a settlement was real. It was something, and I still in reflecting, you know, had to think about how is this going to be implemented? There was a lot, obviously, included there. George Mitchell, at the time, former U.S. Senator George Mitchell, he was basically all but threatening to pull out and let Northern Ireland sort itself out. And I think that that had a tremendous impact on getting, you know, this together. It was after so many false starts.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, looking back, Bertie Ahern showed great leadership and great commitment. He rose above party politics. His mother had just died. He came from the funeral to make the deal. And, you know, that struck me as a really deep commitment that, you know, politics is, can be a dirty game and it can be a short-term game. But there was someone who really showed, I thought, great leadership at the time. And it's worth reflecting on that. As we look at where we are now, and with the DUP now out of government, saying maybe they won't go back into government if, as the Good Friday Agreement states and stipulates that if Sinn Féin have the biggest vote, they get the position of First Minister, and the DUP saying they won't go back in. I think the lesson from the Good Friday Agreement is, listen, there's nowhere else to go. There is nowhere else to go. Republicans at the time were quite concerned, I think, about the principle of consent for Northern Ireland before it could change its constitutional status, because they thought or they feared to be trapped ad infinitum in a state which was created, of course, to have a permanent unionist majority. But they made the deal and said, OK, let's work for that. How can we persuade people to want a united Ireland? And therefore, they worked the Good Friday Agreement. And my feeling is that the DUP as well need to find a way to work this agreement, because it's not going away. And while it can be undermined, it can be threatened, especially, and I'm not saying this to be involved in PLAMAS, but especially with the American government so resolute and bipartisan support, saying, listen, see the gains you made with no border on the island of Ireland, the gains you made in peacemaking, which is going on every day, Adrian, stuff that doesn't make the news in North Belfast and East Belfast, that those gains cannot be thrown away. So, you know, we reflect back, it's a blink of an eye, 24 years. We have now this peace process generation, we call them, these kids that can't remember British soldiers on the streets and can't remember the front pages of our papers every day with the faces of people who've been killed the day before. The gains made, the progress made now needs to be protected. And for me, what is a wonderful experience is that on the news today is Ramadan, the Muslim community of Belfast. We're talking about Ukrainian refugees coming in. We have a large Syrian refugee population. Before, this was an orange and green city, and thanks to the Good Friday Agreement, now it's a rainbow city, and that's where its future lies.
I want to ask you, Martino Muro, I want to ask you about the threats, about what appears to be a rollout, you know, still of British influence in, again, dissecting some areas of the Good Friday Agreement. Not the least is one which appears to be troubling, and that is one that would not only interfere, but it would be very detrimental to tourists in Ireland, or for that matter, you know, the fact that outside of Ireland, that those who would be not only visiting Ireland, but those who would actually who live in Northern Ireland now would be required to have a waiver to, again, set up what appears to be, from here anyway, if not a hard border, an artificial border. Can you explain that one to us?
Well, some of this stuff is bonkers, Adrian. The British government trying to say that if you and Anya come to Dublin and then someone says there was a lovely concert, the Celtic tenors are singing in the Ulster Hall, as I think they were last week, we'll go up to Belfast, that you have to get a visa to visit, like a waiver as we get when we go to America, like a NASDA.
Yeah.
And not only is it contrary to the spirit of the Good Friday Agreement, but it's like turkeys voting for Christmas, because the tourist industry here, which has transformed the city, 2 million visitors from North America, visited Ireland in 2019 before COVID, the highest number ever. And for the first time, many of them, when they flew into Dublin Airport, were turning left and coming up north to see all the beautiful city of Belfast, but the moorings and the Giant's Causeway and so on. So this stuff, it beggars belief that the British would think that it's a good idea. And sadly, there's a small rump of unionism which was fought against its own interests and says we want to do this. So I'm not this type of action. You see it again, trying to deny what the British were involved in the past, when of course everybody was involved in terrible, terrible deeds, trying to stop the Irish language legislation. These things do hold up progress, but they can't stop this peace train, if you wish, this train of progress, this arc of history. And undoubtedly, they could slow things down, but I am really supremely confident that we will have an island which is peace with itself, its people united, and agreeing that there's a better way forward than there was in the past. And the Good Friday Agreement is the bedrock of that. And these silly attempts to try and curry favour with unionism, with extreme unionism by the British government, I do believe they'll all falter and fail, because the roots of the Good Friday Agreement are really deep, and it's not a one side backed agreement. It's backed across the community, because people see the fruits of the agreement. They see the fruits of peace on the streets. So yes, these are difficult interventions by the British government. Yes, they're undermining the Good Friday Agreement. Yes, they're worrying. But despite that, I think with all our allies, we will make sure that they don't deny us the promise and the potential of the Good Friday Agreement.
Finally, Máirtín, I want to ask you about the upcoming election on May 5th in Northern Ireland. How does this particular election, how does it differ, or what is the, you know, what's the bottom line here? What is the expectation coming out of this election?
Well, it's a difficult time post-COVID, but despite that, I think there's no getting away from the fact that this election does give nationalists, those who want to see United Ireland, the chance to have the position of First Minister. Because Michelle O'Neill has been polling, and Sinn Féin has been polling consistently over now many months, probably over a year, as the lead party. I'm pleased to see that they're not trying to whip up support by talking about that. It is only symbolic, but this is a state where we once had a full act, which based on banning flags and emblems from a certain community. So symbols are important in this part of the world. And I think it's possible we will have a Sinn Féin First Minister. I do hope the DUP take a position of Deputy First Minister. They're both equal. But I think that's more facts which can't be denied. And facts which can't be denied is that this place has changed. The city has changed. The region has changed. And you can't really go back. And I think that's one of the signs. Unionists don't have a majority anymore in Stormont. And yet there's now a progressive alliance of many parties, and sometimes that progressive alliance includes the Ulster Unionists. And fair play to our Health Minister Robin Swan, an Ulster Unionist who was exceptional during COVID, didn't play party politics and helped people through that harrowing 2 years of fear and of lockdown. So there's an interesting thing for me. It's not only the Sinn Féin, the Alliance Party, the SDLP. But some of these issues that we're talking about, being more inclusive and having a more fair and equal society and rights for LGBT people, rights for minorities, also unionists have come over to that side as well. So I like to talk about the bright side of the road, and I believe this society is on the bright side of the road and going to stay there, and the Good Friday Agreement is what has made all that possible and will make further progress possible.
Máirtín O'Muilleoir, first of all, thank you for your time. And I know that you're a busy man these days. And good luck. And also, we totally appreciate your being available to us, and the tremendous, for another day we can talk for those who don't know it, about the amazing success that you have in not only bringing a message to North America, but also having tremendous success and making Belfast and Northern Ireland a much better place. Thank you.
Well, Adrian, thank you. And let me say as well, thank you to not only to you and Anya, but everybody in Irish America, which has made the beautiful peace that we enjoy today possible. So thank you very much. I hope to see you in New York.
Thank you. Thank you again.
Slán. 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 Slán.